Welcome back to campus, everyone. We're well into the semester. I was just thinking for those courses that give two midterms, I think this is the week of the first midterm, so time is flying by. I hope you all had a good and a productive summer, and I particularly want to welcome the new senators, as well as the old senators, I guess, and thank you all for your service. I want to welcome the new University Committee Chair, Rick Amasino, and two new UC members, Kirsten Wolf in the Department of German, Nordic, and Slavic Studies, and Paul Campagnola in Biomedical Engineering and Medical Physics, as well as a returning cast from last year from the rest of the UC. There are a couple of new faces around the university. Laurie Reeser is our new Vice Chancellor for Student Affairs. I don't think she is here this afternoon, but many of you, I hope, will have a chance to see her and to interact with her. That is a new role, really overseeing all of our non-academic student life issues across campus. Lois Brooks is our new CIO, and those of you interested in IT issues will no doubt meet her and hear from her in the months ahead. And Lisa Carter is our new Vice Provost of Libraries and Head Librarian. And those of you who are interested in libraries will have a chance to see her. We have two major searches underway right now that are of general interest. One is a search for a new Vice Chancellor for Research and Graduate Education. This was the job that Marsha Malik held when she resigned for personal reasons about 6 to 8 months ago. Norman Drinkwater has taken over that job on an interim basis, and we will be searching for a new person. That committee has been put together and is going to be headed by Dorothy Farrar Edwards. It's a really great committee. And we have a search for a new dean of the business school, which is headed by Mark Kovaleski, a professor in the business school. The application deadline for applicants was actually last week. They started work back in June. So that committee is also well launched and underway. Let me start with our new class of freshmen on campus. It is the largest and most diverse class that we've ever had. As you all know, we set a new record for applicants last spring. They were up 20% overall, 30% for non-residents, 5% for Wisconsin residents. The result of that is a really great new incoming class. We've got about 6,800 freshmen and over 1,100 new transfers. They come from 47 states. A week ago, that was 48. They must be dropping. We seem to be missing Mississippi, West Virginia, and Wyoming, and from 44 different countries. We have enrolled over 3,600 Wisconsin residents as freshmen. There was, I might note, what I consider to be a very unfortunate article in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel last week, which some of you may have seen, that said, oh, the University of Wisconsin-Madison is admitting all of these additional out-of-state students. They must be doing terrible things to Wisconsin students. And it ignored the fact that we have more Wisconsin freshmen in this class than we had 10 years ago because of the declines in the number of high school graduates that is happening in this state. 10 years ago, we had enrolled in our freshman class 4.6% of all Wisconsin freshmen. This year, we have 5.1% of all Wisconsin high school graduates enrolled in the class. So we have actually made a strong and an increasing commitment to Wisconsin, despite what you might have read in the newspaper. I might also note that we had a really substantial uptick in our applications from underrepresented students of color, and we have more new incoming freshmen from among that group than we've ever seen before, 748. But as with all of these issues, those are things we need to continue to work on. This summer, on July 1st, we formally incorporated into campus two major units that used to be part of us until about 50 years ago, the Cooperative Extension Service and Wisconsin Public Radio and TV. That adds just under 1,000 new employees to UW-Madison. It's going to add some people to the governance groups. And it must say, in addition to new employees, it also adds about 35,000 volunteers who support numerous programs, either in public radio, public TV, and 4-H, and other forms of cooperative extension. That's something a little new for us. We don't have that number of volunteers anywhere close in our existing programs. So, you know, there's sort of a lot of new things coming with that. The transition, as some of you know who've been working on it, is extensive. You know, with 50 years apart, they had different HR systems, different practices, different cultures. We've got working groups of both UW-Madison and historically Extension faculty working together on all of these issues, and we're making real progress. We've got a great joint steering team that is overseeing all of this, and my goal, as I've said before, is to make sure that this is a win-win for everyone, that we, through our research and teaching, enrich the programs of Cooperative Extension and Wisconsin Public Media, and they, through their very extensive state work and outreach and connections, enrich our ability to fulfill our mission of pursuing the Wisconsin idea. And one of the things that I'm looking for, and I invite anyone who has ideas about this, is ways over these next 2 years to find ways to put these groups together, you know, to get us to know each other a little bit better. If you have some suggestions in your department, in your school or college, about how you might want to interact more closely with public media or with Extension, let us know, because we're sort of looking for those opportunities and are trying to think about what we need to be doing. I want to spend most of my time today talking about investments. We are very fortunate, for the first time in a number of years, to have had some investment funds this last year that we invested in the campus for this coming fall. That is in part because we got, not only do we not get state cuts, we got a small increase in state dollars, but it's also because all of you in the departments, many of the groups in the administrative area, have really been working to expand, to be entrepreneurial, and to generate some additional revenue. And you know the list of things we've been working on: expanded summer semester, the fundraising campaign with our alumni, right-sizing our out-of-state and professional tuition, a small increase in class size. All of that is beginning to show results. As you know, this university has been underinvested in for much of the last decade, in my opinion. But we don't have infinite dollars, and we've got to be really smart about how we use these new dollars. So I want to say a little bit about what we've been investing in for this year with some of our dollars, and invite you into a conversation about this. First of all, expanding and improving student access. Expanding summer and online options is one way to improve access and create much more flexibility in how students flow through our programs. But financial aid is probably more important than that. And in these past 2 years, we've done a number of things to really expand support for low and middle income students. I think you all, I hope, heard about the Badger Promise that we put on the table 2 years ago, which basically provides tuition funding to first generation students who transfer in. As you might know, large numbers of first gen students start in 2 year schools in Wisconsin. And upon completion of that, particularly if they're strong students, we want to bring them to UW-Madison and want to make sure that that is financially possible. We've got about 150 people this year in our Badger Promise cohort, and I hope that grows. Secondly, this last year, I announced Bucky's Tuition Promise, which is a promise of scholarships that will cover 4 years of tuition and fees to any student who's admitted to UW-Madison whose family income is in the bottom half of the Wisconsin income distribution. That's below $56,000. Our first Bucky Tuition Promise cohort of freshmen has arrived, and about 17% of incoming Wisconsin freshmen have so far taken up this option, which I'm really delighted with. One of our big issues this year, given we just announced this last spring, is to get word out about this program. Because putting it in the Wisconsin State Journal doesn't do a whole lot. So our admissions office and our financial aid office has a major effort to get out to counselors, to community groups, to students all around the state. And that's, of course, something you have to keep doing, because new potential freshmen keep growing up. And we have to make sure that we message about this. Finally, I would note that our Always Forward alumni giving campaign has really increased scholarships, and I just got the latest number. In just the past 3 years, we had a number of really great scholarship matches. We have raised enough money to fund more than 3,400 new scholarships for all groups of students across campus. That's undergraduates, graduate students, athletes, non-athletes, need-based, some of them merit-based. It's a really good number, and before this campaign is over, I hope we're going to put it up to close to 5,000. As noted, just announcing these programs isn't enough. I also want to make sure that we're doing things that are really helpful. And one thing I want to let you know about that I'm quite excited about is Professor Nick Hillman in the School of Education is embedding a research lab inside the Office of Student Financial Aid, calling it SSTAR, Student Success Through Applied Research. Always a good acronym helps. And this is really the first in the nation of a researcher inside a school's financial aid office that we know of. And we want him to be evaluating these programs, you know, as we're expanding them and rolling them out to say, who are we hitting? Who are we not hitting? How well are these working? Is the money making a difference on the margin? As he puts it, we're building the bike while we're riding it. But that's exactly what we need to be doing as a university. So, you know, in order you can bring students in, but you know we also need a community which welcomes those students and makes them feel at home here. And in a minute, I'm going to say more about our new Target of Opportunity program aimed at hiring a more diverse faculty. But we are in the midst of a number of issues about community building and diversity. And I hope you all picked up the two-page handout that Patrick Sims' office puts out at the start of every semester that says, here's what we've done on diversity and inclusion in the last semester. Here's what we're working on. Here's what we're going to be doing over this next year. And if you want to trace that over the last, I think this is the third year we've been putting this out every semester, you can look through and see what we've been working on, what we've completed, and where we're going. So that's student access. Investment area number two, staff and faculty excellence. I'm really pleased with the hiring this past year. We hired 112 new faculty. That is the largest number we've hired in 6 years. It's an 18% increase over our 10-year average. As you all know, if we're not hiring new young faculty, we're in trouble, right? Because that is how places renew themselves and how older faculty get nudged as new faculty come in with new sets of skills and ideas. I'm delighted with that. This next year, I think, is going to look even stronger. We put money out there for a lot of schools and colleges to do additional hiring. They're bringing some money to the table. And of course, the cluster hire program, we ran two clusters this last year. So that's going to be around 30 plus faculty that people will be looking to hire. So I think our hiring numbers are going to go up even higher this next year. And I should note, among the new faculty that came in over this summer, over the last 2 years, we've welcomed 45 new faculty of color to campus. And those of you who are at the reception for faculty of color, both celebrating new people who've come to campus as well as promoted folks, it was just a wonderful group. And that size has grown noticeably in the years that I've been here. So thanks to Patrick and his group and others who helped sponsor that. At the same time we're hiring, the other piece of good news is that our retention cases are down. They're not where we want them to be, but they're down. 2 years ago, after that terrible tenure debate, we had 144 retention cases. Last year, we had 92. This past year, we had 64. That's plus or minus. We don't always get all of them. But that's the right way for them to be going, and hopefully we'll keep that up this year as well. In terms of future investments in all of this, as I say, we expect further hiring. We will do, as you've probably all seen, the call for another round of proposals for cluster hiring. We'll do one round of clusters this year. I hope to keep that going for 5 years. And then there's the compensation side, where we all know that we are lagging. Hopefully, everyone in this room and all of your colleagues know that not only did you get a 2% increase the 1st of July, but you will be getting another 2% increase across the board for all faculty and staff from the state on the 1st of January. So that's a 4% salary increase, long overdue, doesn't begin to make up for 5 years of pretty much close to zero. But it's a good start. And on top of that, despite the fact the state did a 4% commitment this year, we're putting the same amount of money into a critical compensation fund that we did last year. That's $11.5 million, $3.5 million for faculty, $4 million for staff, and $4 million in bonuses that can be used for faculty or staff. I have directed deans and department chairs to say, this is a year we make progress on moving the needle. Everyone's got a 4% increase. Use that additional critical compensation money to really move forward your faculty who aren't where they need to be and your staff who aren't where they need to be. So that with that merit and equity program on top of the 4% increase, we can actually start seeing ourselves move up at least a little bit. So, you know, you will all hopefully see more about that as all your departments move forward. And then the Target of Opportunity program that the Provost's Office has put together is our effort to really step up our effort to diversify our faculty. We've had a small, and in my opinion, not very adequate, target of opportunity program. We all know that diversity matters. I keep saying this with regard to our students. It's an absolutely essential requirement for a 21st century education, but you can't recruit diverse students if you don't also have a diverse community to bring them to. The Target of Opportunity top program, the provost has announced, is I'll give it to you in brief, but all the department chairs should have this information. If there is someone from an underrepresented group in your discipline who you think might be hireable and who would add and deeply benefit your department, you can make a case for it. And if that case is approved, we will fund 100% of that individual's salary for the first 5 years, 6 years if they're an assistant professor, and 50% for the years afterwards. It's essentially the same deal we're giving for clusters, right? And we've already seen a lot of interest. I think we just approved our very first target of opportunity hire this last week. So I hope all of you will take advantage of that and start thinking about how you can use it. Students, faculty and staff, and then the third investment area is obviously in the whole area of research and improving and expanding our research. When I arrived 5 years ago, our research dollars were going down. They were going down in absolute numbers, much less inflation adjusted. That happened for 3 years, and one of the main charges that I gave to Marcia Malik when she came in as the Vice Chancellor for Research is, we've got to turn this around. Well, we've now had 2 years of a turnaround. We've had an 11% increase in research funding over the last 2 years. We've gotten some big research grants, and even since the 1st of September, so I'm hoping this coming year is also going to look strong. But that didn't happen by chance. It happened as the result of a lot of efforts. And obviously, the cluster program is one thing looking forward that we're using for this. The Vice Chancellor's Office for Research and Graduate Education has done a number of things to improve services, make it easier to get research dollars. That agenda is not done, I know that, but we're moving in the right direction. And the UW 2020 program, aimed at supporting early stage projects that are high risk but potential high impact, which is funded by WARF, has been very important. We put 66 UW 2020 project funds out there that's involved 400 faculty and staff. That's $25 million over the last 4 years. And if you look at what's happened to those projects that we funded in the first year or two, we've already more than made the money back. And you know, over the next several years, I think these early stage projects where we've given the money to start up so they can get to the point they can go out for federal funds or other funding are really going to be worthwhile. That's on the research front, and of course you all know that research is closely tied to graduate students. We need to bring in the best graduate students. Helps you attract faculty, helps you do good work, helps you be part of the whole training agenda that is important to virtually all of our faculty. Over the last 5 years, you all know how bad graduate stipend support has been in this university. Over the last 5 years, we have raised graduate stipends by 25%. This last year, we looked at the numbers, and I said, look, let's just bring them up to the median. That was multiple millions of dollars. You see, they're even playing music, that's so excited. We raised stipends this past year by 13%. And we are now at the median of our peer Big Ten schools in TA stipend support. We have not been there for 15 years, and I'm really pleased with that. That is, of course, not a one-time fix. We now can't let that drift down over time, as we've done in the past. We need to keep it there. But I think getting our graduate students funded adequately is a really important piece of the investments that we've been making. So it's a quick trip through investments. Let me say something about budgets, because it so happens to be a budget year in the state of Wisconsin. Those of you who are new, budget years come around every 2 years. We have a two-year budget in this state, and this next year will be a budget cycle. The Board of Regents has already submitted a proposed budget to the governor. The governor's office in late January, early February, will be announcing a budget for all different departments, and then for the next 3 to 4 months, the state legislature will be debating that budget with a hope that it would be finalized and voted through at the latest by the end of June in time for the new fiscal year to start on July 1st. Budget years are always years where we really need people out there advocating for us and speaking about the value of this university. And our university relations team has a whole host of things planned. Until the election is over, you're not going to get anyone's attention. but there's going to be media buys, both social media and traditional media. There's plans for all sorts of people to be around the state, meeting with various groups, for our alumni to be in touch, and of course for myself, and I know many of you through PROFS, to be out there in the state legislature talking to some of the key decision makers. The system request in August asked for $107 million in new state funding. The majority of that is an addition to the outcomes-based funding that was approved in the last budget. About $25 million of it is for what are called capacity-building initiatives, which are additional funds for high-demand areas that where the state business community and our students are demanding more and more courses and presence. If we got that $25 million, around $9 to $10 million of that would come to us, and we've put in proposals for engineering, for nursing, for the business school, and for computer science. And we'll see what comes of that. The capital budget is as important as the the direct dollars to education. You all know what some of our facilities look like. The system has put in a very ambitious capital budget. We'll see what happens when that hits the governor's office and the legislature. Again, we're not going to know much until after the election. On our campus, that budget includes, and this is the first and most important, renovation and expansion of the veterinary medicine building, which has been much needed and is at the top of the list. Additions and renovations to Sullery Hall, basically doing to Sullery what we've already done to Whitty, a building that hasn't been renovated since it was built in the 60s. Replacement of the natatorium, now that we're working on the surf, both of our student rec facilities were terribly deteriorated. And a replacement project on Bascom Hill around our utilities, which you may not see those, but believe me, that's much needed, and if you live anywhere around Bascom Hill, you'll know why. One of the most important things we're talking about is, and this might be eye-glazing to a few people, but is we're asking for the university system itself to get the ability to issue our own bonds for program revenue projects. We are the only system. We are at Madison the only flagship university in the country that does not have bonding authority. Every project that we build has to be voted through by the state legislature, okay? That is unheard of in almost any other state. And what we're asking for is for us to get bonding authority, and we're quite confident of our ability that, you know, Moody's would give us a bond rating, we'd be able to do this. And at least at a start, that we be able to bond for what are called program revenue projects. Program revenue projects are funded projects. They're funded by fees, they're funded by user costs of one sort or another. So a parking garage is a program revenue project. You issue the bonds, but you know the revenue is coming in to pay them off. A dormitory is a program revenue funded project. You know you're gonna get the money to pay it off. There's some research facilities that could be program revenue funded. So at least for that piece, we would like to be able to issue our own bonds. That reduces our ask to the state, takes those bonds off the state debt levels, right, and increases our ability to focus our state asks on the laboratory and classroom and office buildings that we seriously need. So that is going to be a really major effort this year, and we're going to be asking a lot of people to help us on that. And as far as I'm concerned, to be honest, that's the most important thing in this budget. We've got to get out from under the state having complete control over everything we do on capital projects. So compensation for this next year, that request does not go until December. We don't know exactly how that's going to play out. I know the Regents will put a positive compensation request in for both of these next two coming years, and I think there's still a little bit of a debate about where they're going to land. So that's moving forward, and you know, again, those of you involved with PROFS in particular will hear a lot more about this, and anyone who wants to help us on talking to the legislature and various other people over this next year, let us know. Let me close quickly with three final issues. I want to say a word about Foxconn and the agreements that we signed with them. As you may know, our faculty are very deeply engaged in a number of areas where Foxconn has deep research interests. And indeed, you don't do any sort of research partnership with a business or an industry without having faculty who want to work on it. We've already signed three agreements with Foxconn that relate to research projects in engineering, in the School of Medicine and Public Health, and then in the Carbone Cancer Center, which is, of course, part of SMPH. In late August, Foxconn Chairman Terry Gao and I signed a declaration of collaboration, stating our intent to work together on future research projects spanning areas of engineering, healthcare, computer, and data science. We agreed to have some presence at the research park they're going to be building in Racine, and they agreed to partner with us here in Madison on a variety of research projects that we have mutual interests in. Among other things, Foxconn announced that they were making a gift of $100 million to UW-Madison. Most of that funds, don't get too excited, because most of that's going to go to the engineering school, about $75 million will go to paying for half of the cost of a new building on the engineering quad. It's a building that engineering has long wanted to build. It's in their master plan. I think it's going to be a big advantage to campus. It will be an interdisciplinary building in terms of engineering, i.e. it's not just mechanical or civil. It's going to span all of that. There will be student presence there and presumably a variety of labs and equipment and other things. The engineering department at the school is on tabs to raise the other half of the dollars for that. That's going to be a heavy lift, but Ian Robertson believes that that is doable, and this building is certainly much needed. The remaining $25 million is to be negotiated in these areas of healthcare engineering and computer and data sciences, and we will negotiate that out for either student support, for faculty support, potentially for some research support. This, I think, is a real opportunity, and I myself hope that there's some other businesses in the state of Wisconsin that might get the idea that they should be supporting the university with these sorts of gifts as well. So so that's Foxconn. Number two, a report back on the report you all saw last May from a group of faculty on this campus that I had asked to look into our history relating to the groups on this campus that operated under the name Ku Klux Klan. That report arrived last spring. If you haven't read it, Google KKK report on the UW website. It's a really beautifully written report. It's about 12 pages long. They had a number of recommendations there. We have done a number of those things. We're moving forward on them. But one of them was that we engage in a public history project here on campus, collecting oral and archival history from more marginalized groups whose voices may not be very well represented in our official histories. And as a result of that recommendation, I've allocated dollars to a 2.5 to 3 year public history project designed to collect such archival and oral history. Professor Brenda Gale Plummer from the History Department has agreed to chair a search committee to look for a director for this public history project. I'm hoping it's going to involve undergraduates, graduate students, a real opportunity to do some research seminars about and get them undergraduates in particular involved in doing some of this work. The deliverables from this include a report on what they found, taggable online databases, curricular materials that might be usable in a variety of different classes, as well as some forms of public display of this information to talk about what this is. So I'm really looking forward to seeing that project launch. And finally, quickly, the third thing, I want to let you know that tomorrow we will be releasing another report that got commissioned probably early in the winter last year. I had asked a couple of our most prominent computer science alums to work with a group of faculty and others to survey our computer science department and talk about how we can raise our game. And our computer science department is listed as number 13 in the country. It's not a slouch department. It's a very, very good one. But the importance of this department to the university, to our reputation, to an increasing number of fields is you know, really clear. And I was looking to say, what do we need to do? And that report is going to come out with some recommendations. And those of you interested not just in that department and in closely related departments in LNS, there'll be some recommendations around that. But there's also going to be some discussion of what we can do across campus on the large number of faculty working in data science in all sorts of fields to create greater synergies. And so if nothing else, if you're interested in this, read the first 5 pages of the report, which is a lovely description of how data and computer technology are changing the way we live and in turn changing the way in which academic disciplines are being done. It's a wonderful call to arms in some sense, and I'd like to leverage that to really deepen and broaden some of the work on this campus in that area. This is lots of things happening in the coming year. As always, we have plenty of challenges in front of us, but also a lot of good things, I think, to be proud of and to look forward to.